Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad, App Store, and sometimes Apple TV. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me here this week is Bill Palmer from Beat Week Magazine. Hey, Bill.
I mean, you really couldn't get anybody more knowledgeable than me on the show?
You are the one of the experts. You have a magazine.
I am the bottom of the barrel, and you just scraped it, my friend.
No, there are other people.
Other people even further down the list.
Other people be here. That I can't come up with right now, but there are other people. Thanks for being here, Bill. Jeff Gamet's here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, as always, it's great to be here. And Bill, what I think Michael meant when he said there are people lower in the barrel than you, he meant me. I'm pretty sure.
I think he meant he tried to get Skype test call on as a kid. Even she said her mom was vomiting.
Yeah, that didn't work out too well, did it? Yeah.
Yeah. Callbacks to things the audience has no idea.
That's what makes them fun.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll make it to the end of the show.
Yeah, I don't know. There comes a point when people get afraid of what's going on in the sausage factory.
Yeah, I'm afraid. And I'm involved in the sausage factory.
Yeah, I thought this was a podcast about meat products.
Yeah, we might actually have a new podcast coming out called We Talk About Movies on our iPads.
Would now be a good time for a colorful metaphor?
I can't wait to hear it.
Something I forgot. Fish, Denver, orange, juice.
Okay, all right. We'll get into it so people know what's going on because everybody's confused right now. So last week we presented the We Have Communicators hotline. And for those interested in calling us and offering comments or questions or anything like that, the number is 202-642-6667. And the first call we got was actually from Jeff, and he called in during the show. And because it's from Google Voice, we got a nice transcription, and the transcription reads, "For the well, orange juice, you finished all right." And this is what it sounds like.
Football, orange, shoe, fish. Bye.
Google's getting closer with the transcription stuff.
They got orange. So, that was All right. So we do have we have two calls that came in. The first, we asked what you guys thought of Jeff drew something for us last week, as he does often during the show. Maybe not every week, but we include them in the show notes. This was Steven's comment on his drawing.
Hey, guys. I love the show. Just want to comment on Jeff's drawing that he posted for the last episode. I would have to say that's probably a sloth of some sort with a really large head. Guys, keep doing the show. I love what you're doing. Thanks a lot. Bye.
So there you go. Thank you, Steven.
With a head condition.
Yeah.
Steven totally nailed it.
Thank you. Head condition. And then we also received a call from Tom, correcting something that somebody said, about tethering.
Hey, I just wanted to make a comment on episode 85. At one point you guys were talking about tethering. Well, you did it several times, but at one point someone made the comment that tethering would probably eat up a lot of battery life. And I'm pretty sure it was Jeff responded with, "But who cares? I mean, come on, somebody should have jumped all over that one." And if it was a joke, you need to work on your delivery. I mean, that's ridiculous. The one thing that people are constantly screaming about with the iPhone is battery life. And anything that's going to chew away at it is going to be a huge deal. By the way, hey, this number's local for me. That's you guys around D.C.? Anyway, thanks. Bye.
Wow, I can't believe it took people that long to call me out. So thanks for doing it. And you're right. Everyone should care about battery life.
Yeah, thank you, Steven. No, Tom. That was Tom.
That was Tom.
And as far as the area code on our number 202, it's just whatever Google Voice gave us. But regarding the battery life, for if you're tethering using USB, you're going to get power via USB from your computer. And when I do tether over Wi-Fi using the MyWi application, it's all right. You know, it does definitely use up battery life, though. So I recommend if you are going to tether, those who jailbreak or are in other countries where it's totally cool to tether, I would recommend USB.
That sounds great to me, and thanks for covering for me on that one. You rock.
Thank you. I know I do. Again, the number is 202-642-6667. So put that in your phone, save it for later. You'll call in about something. Any other comments before we move into the stories? No. Okay.
No.
Yeah, we cut out all the silence, so don't worry. Okay. So Apple has announced that 2 million iPads have been sold in less than 60 days.
Yeah, 58 days to be exact.
Yep.
I like how they put out that press release on a holiday just so they could say it was 58 and not have to wait one more day.
Well, it is impressive. I'm honestly very, very impressed by that because, you know, I was one of those people who said that the iPad was kind of dumb and I didn't understand the reason for it. And I, you know, look at me, I ended up with two of them.
One for each hand, right?
Exactly, yeah.
One for your double-fisted iPadder.
When Apple announced 1 million iPads sold after 1 month, I went out on a limb and said they're going to sell 10 million by the end of 2010, which I say out on a limb because that would require sales to accelerate before the year's over because there's only, what, you know, 7 more months left or whatever. In this case, sales have stagnated from month 2 to month 1, if you look at it that way. But there's factors on both sides, including the fact that there are now inventory problems all over the country, retail and online. If you remove those, then you could look at it and say, well, maybe it's accelerating after all. You know, demand is accelerating. Apple just can't fulfill them yet, which we assume Apple will solve the inventory problems unless there is a component shortage they can't get past. But I really think they're going to sell 10 million of these buggers by the end, by the end of the year, especially when you factor in the holiday push and the fact that it's easier to buy as a gift than an iPhone because there is no contract with the Wi-Fi model.
Yeah, or with a 3G model too. And not to mention the fact that it's available in other countries now as well. And that, as you said, the supplies are super low. So, Jeff? Now, okay, go ahead.
Okay, so the whole thing with Apple announcing the 2 million sold on Memorial Day, Brian Chafin actually had a theory on why Apple did that. And his idea was that Apple did it on Monday because it was, what, Friday? So like a couple days before when NBC and Time Warner said that they weren't going to be creating iPad-compatible websites for streaming TV shows. And so his idea was Apple made the announcement on Monday so that people, in this case, the networks, would see that the iPad is selling well and doing well. And so it was more like an in-your-face response to the networks.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, that story really confused me. The fact that it seems as though not only are those two companies not planning, NBC and Time Warner aren't planning to convert to HTML5 on their websites for video, they're also, it doesn't seem like they plan to make native applications either.
Which, in the grand scheme of things, is not a big deal, I think. And just to be clear, I'm not making a joke. I'm serious on this one. For whoever calls in to go, what the hell are you thinking? But I think it doesn't really matter because you can already get content from these companies through the iTunes store. And if Hulu manages to get their app together for the iPad, you'll be able to get the content that way too. So it's not like the studios are snubbing Apple and the iPad. They're just choosing not to invest in an alternative streaming method for websites.
And it seems so unlikely that people are going to hop all around the internet just to watch a show. These days, most people don't know what channel their favorite show is on anyway, because they catch it on the DVR and they pick it from a list. They're not tuning to Channel 5 anymore.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, people who want to pay for an episode and own it are going to buy it from iTunes. People want to be cheap and stream it are going to go to Hulu, and that's probably, you know, that's the extent of it. And also, I got to say, you know, we're talking about NBC, who just canceled some of its most popular shows because it was somehow losing money on Heroes and Law and Order. And Time Warner, who's all I can think of is AOL and just cringe when I think of them. Am I supposed to care what these companies think? I mean, it's easy to pick on these companies, but then again, it's easy to pick on these companies for a reason. These are not exactly your leaders. These are companies that are kind of bleeding on the pavement to begin with and probably aren't thinking about the future so much as how are they going to, you know, make payroll this month.
Yeah, and eventually, I think, they will jump on the HTML5 bandwagon. It just isn't going to be for a while.
Well,
but they'll do it because everyone else is doing it and all their friends are on the bridge jumping off, so they have to jump off too. They're just holding out for a little while before they do it.
Well, if you look at Hulu, I'm almost certain they've said at some point that the videos they have are already H.264. Correct?
Oh, that's, I don't know.
So if Hulu already has their library of videos in H.264, it would make sense that whatever NBC and Time Warner are doing on their websites, you know, it doesn't really matter because Hulu will take care of it. And I can't see Hulu not creating an application for the iPad by the end of the year. I think it's absolutely going to happen, especially with the numbers that we're seeing of iPads sold and its incredible reception.
You know, and okay, so if Hulu releases their app, and I agree, there's absolutely no reason why it won't happen sometime this year. But it's a non-issue for companies like NBC because they already have content on Hulu.
Right. Exactly.
So, you know, if the money has already been invested in making sure the content is in a format that works outside of the requirements of Flash, maybe they're just going to do their investment on the Hulu side and call it good.
Yeah, I don't see any problem with that. I absolutely prefer Hulu because it does do that content aggregation. And I, you know, like Bill said, half the time I don't even know where the TV shows come from. I don't know which network it's from.
I don't know what network they're on. I don't know what time of day they actually broadcast. All I know is that when I sit down in front of my TiVo, I can look at the list and I see the shows that I'm interested in and watch them.
Yep. So Apple is reportedly planning to revamp the Apple TV based on the iPhone OS, which makes tons of sense, especially considering the OS 10 version that they've had on there is, I think it's OS 10 Tiger. And it's just kind of gotten slower and slower with the current hardware that it's running. And I see no reason with what the iPad can do. Why not use an A4 chip, do the iPhone OS, and just tweak the interface a bit?
You know, I'll believe this one when I actually see it.
Well, the rumor says, and this is from Engadget, it'll be $99. It'll be essentially an iPhone without a screen, so it will not have an internal spinning hard drive. Rather, it'll have reportedly a 16-gigabyte solid-state storage device like the iPhone, and it will be able to play 1080p video, and I guess the idea is that it's going to be largely a streaming device.
Why would it run a touchscreen operating system if it doesn't have a screen or the ability
I don't
to
think
touch?
They're
that's my question.
I don't think they're going to be doing a touchscreen operating system. I don't think that's the point of using the iPhone OS. I think the point of using the iPhone OS is that they already have something that's been scaled down well enough for a CPU like the A4 or something that would fit well in something like that and cost $99.
I guess what I don't get though is, I mean, if you have a real iPhone or even an iPod Touch, why would you want to buy a fake iPhone and hang it off the back of your TV on a cable? I mean, it's just something strange about the whole thing. Why would the content not just be on your computer? What does the Apple TV serve at this point. Why wouldn't your iPhone or Touch or iPad be your remote control via an app it just seems like a very strange way to continue to keep this product being separate from the entire ecosystem for
I don't think it is separate at all. I think it is actually doing what you just described, which is having an application for viewing this content on your screen. So yeah, you can plug your iPhone or iPad into your TV, but you don't have an interface on the TV that you can click through with a remote from your couch.
You know, I'm not buying this. I'm looking at Engadget's article. And what I'm seeing instead is, if Apple is doing something like this, that this will be a feature of iPhone OS 4, and it will be built into the iPhone and the iPod Touch, and then this fall in the iPad, so that you can take your pocket-sized device with you and plug it into your television and have an interface for navigating your content. Seeing this as the next Apple TV, I'm just not getting it. Why, with as upset as everyone has been about the device starting off with a 40 gig hard drive, now you're going to cut it down to 16 gigs and tell people that's better?
Yeah, I think that is a little bit strange, although we may see larger sizes on something like this. I don't think that they would stick with just a 16 gigabyte version. They did mention also in the article that the time capsule would be able to be used as external storage, which I think is stupid.
Yes, I
don't.
Either it's a cloud-based device or it's not, though. That's what I don't. It's got 16 gigs in it, and it does something else with the time machine. Your computer's involved, your iPhone, but then all of a sudden it's also the cloud. There's just so many details in here that seem to conflict with each other.
Yeah,
so, I mean, possible they just haven't been put together in the right, you know, way of thoughts being connected for us. And
it may, I think it may, if this product does come out, it would probably have a lot to do with the iTunes.com/Lala rumors that we're hearing.
Okay. And for that, I would point you back to a feature of iPhone OS 4 and not something that's a dedicated device.
Sure. Yeah, now, that would be fantastic. I do think that would be great, although even if you do have that interface on your iPhone, you still either need a cable that's long enough to go from your TV to your couch to control it, or you need some other way to control it. There's no infrared receiver as there is on the Apple TV.
Or you just need the next generation of TVs to have built-in Wi-Fi and an interface. I wouldn't be totally surprised for Apple to have secretly partnered with one television company who's going to unveil some new TV model that is already compatible with, you know, Apple loves to do that where they start off with an exclusive partner and then go from there.
Sure.
Yeah, or how about if Apple releases a little receiver that connects to your television that works over Wi-Fi?
Or something that maybe that the adapter that plugs into your TV includes an infrared receiver that works with the current remotes.
Here's what I'm picturing now based on what we've been talking about. Apple releases a $99 iPhone TV product, and it's the receiver, the wireless receiver that works Wi-Fi or something, or infrared, something like that. And then it also includes an application for your iPhone, iPod Touch, or iPad. And then what that does is let you stream the content to your television that's on your device that's in your hand, and then gives you an interface that's something like the Apple remote interface that you have right now for navigating Apple TV, so that you can navigate the content, and there you go.
The only thing I would quibble on is that I think most people that have an iPhone or even a Touch is probably pretty full. There's not a lot of room for video content. I still think the only place you have room for large amounts of video content is your home computer. And so even if you're using your iPhone or Touch in your hand to control the TV, if it's streaming from somewhere, it's streaming from your computer in the next room, and they're all somehow on Wi-Fi.
Okay, and so now we're back to where we were in the beginning, where we have a bunch of features that just don't seem to fit together properly.
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that features of a new Apple product have leaked and we just haven't been able to connect them together and understand where Apple was going. And then, like, even with the original iMac, or we knew all the features, you know, 12 years ago. We just couldn't understand how they were going to fit together until they unveiled it. It's like, oh, okay, now we see where you were going.
Exactly. So we'll have to wait and see. And my guess is that if Apple really is working on something like this, that we'll know soon.
I feel like the idea that it would be a device that runs the iPhone OS on an A4 chip that is dedicated for your TV, I think that makes a ton of sense. Because otherwise, the Apple TV is I think it's a Celeron chip running Tiger, which is just sluggish.
Yeah, but now we've got a new problem, which is you've just fragmented your Apple TV market.
Yeah, but so there's only 12 people using the old one anyway.
Yeah, and I'm one of those 12 people.
But let's not forget, I mean, this has somehow managed to be one of the only true flops that Apple has released in the entire decade.
You know, I don't think it is a flop. And it has not been a big seller for Apple. But I think this is a sleeper product, and Apple has actually worked to kind of downplay what Apple TV is.
Yeah, I think it's an ongoing experiment. They're learning about what to do with it.
Well, I don't think it's so much an experiment as it is this seed that Apple has planted, and that it's there, and they got it out, and it's been out for a while now, and the networks are seeing this as a device where they're going, yeah, whatever. And Apple keeps calling it a hobby. Apple doesn't do stuff for fun. They do stuff for money.
No, but if something flops, then they'll call it a hobby afterwards.
Yeah, but they would also kill it.
Yeah.
And they haven't. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is a device that Apple has a bigger plan for. And we haven't seen what they really want to do with it. They've gotten it out there. They've gotten people familiar with it. They've gotten the studios comfortable and not even thinking about it anymore. And then when the right time comes, then they'll do whatever it is that they're going to do with Apple TV that makes the network sit back and go, oh, crap, we didn't see that one coming. Now, these features that Engadget is talking about may very well play into that master plan.
See, I see it having been such a abject failure that absolutely no one outside of Apple aficionados even knows the product exists or has ever heard of it. And I think it's been such a total failure that you're right, Apple doesn't want to give up on it. They want this to work. They think maybe they just keep trying, they'll get it right. And I think they're probably at this point not afraid to blow up the whole thing and cancel the product, and I'm going on a limb, but maybe even do a trade-in program for people whose old Apple TVs who are now going to be completely cut off from this, you know, I mean, it failed. Blow it up. Try again. And I think maybe they're going to go a whole different direction now. And you know, because what they're doing just ain't working. I mean, it's working for you. You like it, obviously. But I mean,
there are better products.
And maybe two of them have heard of Apple TV, and odds are neither one of them owns one.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on.
Haha. Michael got bored with the topic.
I got so bored. All right. The Wired application came out. Jeff, you got a copy of it, right?
I did. I downloaded it and started playing with it, and I need to spend more time with it so that I can offer a very well-rounded opinion of what the Wired magazine is on the iPad. But to be honest, my first impression right now is that, and Bill, you will get this. Michael, you won't, because this is before you were a Mac user. It felt like someone gave me a copy of From Alice to Ocean. And yeah, that's what it feels like. It feels like that whole, hey, guess what? There's this whole new rockin' thing, and it's called a CD. And we can put all of this multimedia content on it, and you'll just love it. And so when From Alice to Ocean came out, I was blown away at the time, because there was nothing like it around. It was this fantastic CD, but in reality what it was I think it was like a HyperCard stack. And so you would click through to each point on this trail that that someone took a journey heading from Alice out to the ocean in Australia, and then you'd read text, and then it would play audio or a little QuickTime movie. And that's what the wired application feels like to me right now. It feels like someone gave me From Alice to Ocean on my iPad.
Yeah, I agree. Not only that, it's enormous. It's 500 megabytes, which is completely unacceptable, I think.
Oh, I totally killed the Starbucks network when I downloaded that.
Yeah, yeah. The way that you navigate through it, yeah, you scroll left and right, but when there are some articles that take up more than the iPhone or the iPad screen, and there's no real indication, there's no visual cue that lets you know that, hey, this one you scroll down on to get more information.
Yes, that bothered me too.
I also felt that the Mars piece was super gimmicky.
Now, I haven't checked out the Mars piece yet.
It's basically I checked out the actual print copy of the magazine, and it seemed initially like it didn't have all of the information. It does have all the information provided in the magazine, although it's much harder to get to because you have to rotate through this around this virtual Mars, and not everything that it shows pops up, but it shows pop-ups for some of these as you rotate, and you have to make sure you let go, and it's really tough to get through. And yeah, it's cool, but I think it's more of a gimmick than anything else. Now, the more interesting part about this is I also thought the navigation outside of just swiping was all right. The fact that you can tap and you get the you get a table of contents scrolling, or you can get this kind of scroll through sort of view. It's kind of interesting, but the I guess Adobe helped them create this application.
It's like you read my mind. That's where I was going.
Oh, I know that's where you're going. And they announced today. Adobe announced today that they're going to be launching an iPad focused digital publishing platform based on the technology they used in the Wired application, which, Jeff, you take it away.
Okay, so first you said that the Wired issue felt very gimmicky
and clunky
and clunky. Okay, so the gimmicky part I totally understand, because the Wired issue is the debut of Adobe's new digital publishing platform. So what they want to do is make sure that you have this sample of all the cool things that you can do with digital publishing platform. Therefore, every feature that's available has to be used in the issue somewhere. So there's certain places where Wired may have done something different with the way they presented the articles, but because they needed to be able to show off a specific feature of digital publishing platform, they did it in a way that highlights whatever that was. So in that sense, yeah, that I think that accounts for a lot of that, hey, it's just kind of this flashy show-off thing, because ultimately that's what it's supposed to be. And the brilliant part is Adobe and Wired create this proof of concept sample of what Adobe's new stuff can do, and we're paying $5 to check it out. So they can't lose in that respect. But anyhow, so digital publishing platform, what they did was they created this set of tools that works with Adobe InDesign CS5 so that they can create all of this interactive stuff in a magazine layout, and then it generates the application that becomes the magazine. And I'm really interested in finding out exactly what it's doing under the hood, because it sure sounds a lot to me like something that Apple is prohibiting with their iPhone OS 4 developer agreement, because they have to create an application when they create the magazine. And as far as I know, they're not using Xcode. They're actually generating all of this stuff out of InDesign CS5. So that means they're not using Apple's compilers. They're not using something that directly accesses Apple's APIs. That sure sounds a lot like something that's prohibited, just like creating an application in Flash and then compiling it as an iPhone app.
And it is interesting. They also say that they plan to allow a cross-platform distribution with these tools.
Sure, and that sounds a lot like what Adobe is doing with their Flash tools in Creative Suite 5, with some of the stuff that they're doing with Dreamweaver CS5, where you can do the create once and then distribute many. So I need to talk with Adobe and get more info, because I'm very interested in how they're doing this. On one hand, this is a very, very cool beginning. Sure. Even though right now I'm going, hey, it's from Alice to Ocean. Thanks for the interactive CD.
Right.
But this is also the beginning. And so they'll figure out what's working and what isn't, and what they can do that goes beyond the print metaphor, which is essentially what we have here. It's print metaphor with some bells and whistles added in. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. It's just an observation.
Yeah, what they really need to do is focus on creating one application per publication that is an empty shell, and then allows you to download each issue individually. And it needs to be small. It needs to be reasonable.
Okay, that's what Woodwing is doing. And guess what? I'm taking you off in a completely different world than you've ever been in before.
Okay.
So, okay.
Tomorrowland.
So we're going to Tomorrowland, and they have printers. Ooh. All right, so...
That's Yesterdayland.
I mix those up all the time.
Scanners. Anyway, yeah. Continue.
Okay, so Woodwing is a company that makes add-ons for products like Adobe InDesign. And what they did was they created this whole publishing system that works with InDesign and lets you create an interactive magazine from your InDesign layout. This sounds a lot like Adobe's digital publishing platform, because it's a lot like that. Now, they worked to get a system that would do what needed to be done to get something ready for the iPad, so that Time could get their magazines on the iPad right away. And they did it, and they made it work. The problem was, when they first released all of this, it only worked in such a fashion that you had to create a separate application for each issue of the magazine, which is very clunky, which is not a good way to do it, and that's exactly what you have to do at this moment with digital publishing platform. Woodwing has since updated their tools, and Time now has the thing where you free download the viewer part, and then you pay for the issues, and they download. And so you have one application and multiple issues. And I started playing with that also, and it works really well. And the content that you get, the file sizes aren't nearly as big as what you're getting with Wired. The initial download of the Time app isn't that big, and it works really well. You can do your in-app purchasing, and it's a really smooth and pleasant experience. So what I'm hoping is Adobe figures out how to make that part work. But if they're not using Apple's APIs, I don't know how they could make that happen. However, Woodwing must be doing it without Apple's APIs, so they figured it out. So we'll see how this all plays out.
Yeah. There are also applications like Zinio, which I haven't played a whole lot with, but...
You know, I haven't done much with Zinio either, but the little bit that I've done, I felt like someone gave me a PDF reader.
Yeah.
And that was it. So I need to play more with that so that I can offer a fair evaluation, which I really should do, because now I'm playing with a Wired app and with Time.
Yeah. Okay, what else do we have to talk about? Stuff. Oh, Apple is increasing support for self-publishing in the iBook store, which is fantastic. They're now allowing independent authors and publishers to submit their books to the iBook store, which is great because I still can't get The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy on the iBooks application and a bunch of other books. I always feel like whenever I search for something, 9 times out of 10, I can't find it in the iBook store. I'm very happy that Amazon has the Kindle app out because there are some things there that I can get that I can't get in the iBook store, but I would definitely prefer the iBooks application over anything else because it is way better than the Kindle app or the Barnes & Noble app.
What you're describing is similar to the early days of the iTunes Music Store, where you'd search for a band and there'd be maybe a 40% chance that it would be in there, and a lot of times you still had to go to the store and buy the CD and rip it or steal it. And
torrents.
As the case may be. I never did that because I was really too lazy to have to tag them properly afterwards. But anyway, you know, it's a reminder of just how early stages this is. We think, oh, well, books are on the iPad. Well, no, you know, some books are on the iPad. Apple's got to be smart here and open the door to everyone because they do have competition here, including competition on their own platform with the Kindle and now the Barnes & Noble Nook. And so they better be smart and open the door for all publishers or else they will go running to the other platform.
Now, you got to wonder if Apple's making any money from these from the iBook store, the 30% kickback. Is it still 30% on the iBooks?
I believe so.
Yeah. Do you guys think that they're making any money on that? Do you think that they care if publishers are going to them or if they're going to Amazon?
Well, they literally never made a penny off of podcasting, and yet, you know, you can argue the ancillary benefits of the fact that iTunes pretty much owns podcasting from top to bottom.
That's a good point. So keep in mind, Michael, that the purpose of the iTunes Store and now the iBook Store is not to sell content. It's to sell hardware. So Apple doesn't care so much about making big piles of money off of the content that comes out of there. What they care about is having enough content to make it compelling for people to go and buy their hardware. So, of course, they would like to see more books and more publishers come on board, and eventually they will. But like Bill said, this is the early stages. Just like when the iTunes Music Store launched, you couldn't find a lot of the stuff that you wanted. But it was the beginning. It gave people an idea of what was to come, and eventually it got bigger. And the same thing will happen with the iBook Store, too.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. Skype has been updated to work over 3G. On the iPhone, I should say.
I have like,
but it works
10,
on the iPad too.
It does work on the iPad too. Did you ever get you got the kit right? And have you tried it with the Skype app yet? The camera kit.
I have not tried it with the Skype app yet.
Okay.
I've just been all excited that I can plug my iPhone into my iPad, and all the pictures come off.
Yeah. Bill or Jeff, have you tried calls over 3G on the Skype app?
Not me. No, I have like 10,000 rollover minutes. I'm almost never on the phone, so it's not a feature that I would need. I'm not the right person to really comment.
I haven't tried it. However, I was talking with Dave Hamilton earlier today, and he said that he's been playing with it, and that it's almost creepy how good the audio quality is. He did a phone call where he tested talking with someone on his iPhone over the regular AT&T connection, and then they switched and did it with Skype to Skype, and it was like going from talking to someone on a cell phone to talking to someone in the same room.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so Dave was really pleased.
Maybe we should do next week's show over 3G on our iPhones.
We totally could.
We could, but we're not. That doesn't sound very reliable.
You think?
Yeah. Adding 3G-ness, adding AT&T crappiness to Skype crappiness does not equal goodness. It equals badness.
Wouldn't they cancel each other out? I mean, wouldn't it just sound awesome?
Or it might be like crossing the streams.
In fact, I think we should do it over Edge Network and use a first-generation iPhone in the middle of a desert on a rainy day.
I hear they have good reception in the middle of the desert.
As long as you're on the interstate, you're fine.
All right, we have...
He's like, what do I do with that? Where do I go from there?
Just so you know, since it's an audio, not a video podcast, I was silently shaking my head.
Oh, okay.
Because
good.
I was thinking,
we need the commentary.
Okay, so the visual I had in my head was Griswold sitting on top of a sand dune in the middle of the desert
on his iPhone,
and thinking, I just got a great signal. And then his cousin, played by Randy Quaid,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
turns on the microwave and says something like, "I'm making hot pockets," and he loses the signal.
Yeah. Perfect. All right. We have way more to talk about. We have stuff on the iPhone 4G, rumors and video chat and battery stuff and parts leaking out and iPhone insurance and stuff like that. Before we get to that, we have to talk about one of our favorite sponsors, and that is Citrix with GoTo Assist Express. You can try it free for 30 days by going to GoToAssist.com/Allie. For those who don't know what GoTo Assist Express is, it is the best way to help someone out on their computer, and when you can't make it to their physical keyboard and mouse. So the way it works is you sign up, you get the application on your Mac or PC, open it up, and it'll give you a URL as well as a session ID. And so when your father calls you, like mine did yesterday, and wants to talk about the vacation you're taking, and he doesn't know how to use Google Maps for some reason. I really thought he knew how to use Google Maps, to be honest, but I had to help him through that. Unfortunately, I was away from my computer, so I had to talk him through it over the phone and tell him, okay, go to Google. Okay, now type in Porcupine National Forest and click on Maps. Okay, now click on Directions. No, not that one. The other one, yeah. And then it was seriously a 20-minute phone call to get him to see it on Google Maps. It was terrible. But if I had been at my computer, I could have simply said, type in this URL and throw in this pin, and then within a few seconds, I would say 30 seconds to a minute, I'd be able to see his screen, click around for him, show him exactly what I was talking about, and it would have taken no time at all. For those who are into tech support and not just showing their fathers how to use Google Maps, you can also send files back and forth. Works on both Macs and PCs. He uses a PC, so it would have worked perfectly. You can chat between the two of you. You can see an entire system profile, so you can see all the hardware, all the software. You can see everything that's running in the background. And you can do up to 8 sessions at once. And if your dad is like my dad and he's concerned about security, don't worry. It's 128-bit SSL encrypted, so you don't have to worry about people seeing your passwords or your screen or anything else going on. It's very easy, and I definitely recommend it. Go to assist.com/Allie. You can try it free for 30 days. And that supports the We Have Communicators podcast. So check it out. Go to assist.com/Allie. And with that, moving on, Apple is reportedly holding a second 3GS like iPhone in case the 4G doesn't come out, which I thought was very interesting. Now, based on the fact that we're seeing so many parts just everywhere at this point, I don't think we're going to see this backup phone. But the story behind this is that I guess they started work on the iPhone 4G project at the end of 2008. And in case there were issues with getting the new parts for it, either, you know, the new CPUs or the new cameras or what have you, they had this other phone that is a similar form factor to the 3GS and the 3G that would allow them to come out with a new updated phone. But as I said, there are just so many parts floating around at this point. It's pretty clear that we're going to... I mean, Jeff, what do you think? What do you guys think about all the parts that are roaming around at this point? Is it a definite indication that what we've seen from Gizmodo is what we're going to see next week?
I think that there's some serious information control issues going on inside Apple right now. And I think a lot of it may very well stem from Gizmodo doing their whole thing, and, you know, showing the videos and photos of the prototype. And I have a feeling there's a lot of other companies out there that are suddenly getting lax with their information.
They figure it's already out there. Why bother being, you know, tight-lipped about this?
Right. And what they're going to find out is that they don't get contracts next time around.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So a lot of these parts that are showing up may very well be legit parts, but Apple cannot be happy about all that information going out.
Yeah.
But this whole thing with a backup plan in case the one iPhone isn't ready. Really?
Yeah. See, that to me,
I'm not buying that for a minute.
I'm not really buying that either, because Apple doesn't do arbitrary stuff, right? Why would they have another version of the 3GS unless they're going to be tossing in an A4 and just saying, hey, it's faster?
Well, I would say that the more likely thing is that there's a 4G coming, which, by the way, I would bet a fair amount of money won't be called the iPhone 4G because it doesn't
it's not
use 4G network. But anyway, there'll be the iPhone 4G. It'll be at $200 and $300. There'll be a product which probably won't be called the iPhone 3GS because that's just the dumbest name ever and they need to get rid of it. But, you know, I'm guessing there'll be a $99 iPhone 3GS called something else.
iPhone Classic.
You know, and whoever is spreading this rumor just seen these two models and has misinterpreted the reason why there's two new models coming to market. I think they both come out. I think we know that because, you know, Walmart is blowing out the 3GS model at $97.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. That seems like the most likely of all these explanations.
I'll accept that. That seems reasonable.
So, but it only takes one a shortage of one component to keep a product from launching. And I hope I'm not jinxing it by saying that. But just because the other 57 components are out there, and you know, doing YouTube videos and talking sock puppets or whatever it is, doesn't mean that every component is ready.
Are you talking about the Moss puppet?
No. I hope that's not an omen for what I just said. I hope I'm not right about that. And I don't think I am. I think it'll launch. I think it'll be announced this week, and I think it'll be on sale by the end of the month in quantity. And I very much doubt there'll be supply problems because Apple's got that going on with the iPad, and they seem to only have one product being a shortage at a time.
Possibly.
I'm with you on that, Bill. I think we'll see the announcement at WWDC. That seems like pretty much a no-brainer. And then by the end of the month, we'll be standing in line buying our new iPhones.
No, I think that we're going to see it sooner than the end of the month. I'd say in a couple more weeks, probably no later than the week of the 20th in June. At least if Boy Genius Report is to be trusted, they say that we will see it in June, not July, and from what they've heard, it won't even be late June.
That would be interesting, because so there.
And that's according to reports they've received from people who can be trusted at AT&T, supposedly.
Okay, well, it's totally plausible that if Apple announces something at WWDC, that the time scale that Boy Genius Report is talking about could happen. So that fits in kind of with what I was thinking, because that's still before the end of the month. I was assuming it would be like the last Friday of the month. Or if they go like with a whole iPad style launch that they did in the US, it'll be the last Saturday of the month.
At 11:59 PM.
Yeah, or actually, in this case, it turned out to be the first Saturday of the month. But
you know, there is an urgency for Apple to get this product out the door for multiple reasons. Everyone already knew it was coming. Now with the Gizmodo thing, even more people know it's coming, and that means people aren't buying right now. And there's all this, you know, ridiculous hoopla over Android, which I'm sure you don't want to go down. But
oh, yeah.
You know, the phony market share numbers that turned out to be based on a volunteer online survey. And yet the Geek Tech Press has still reported as hard market share numbers that claim that there are more Android users than iPhone users. I mean, this stuff is total BS, but it adds up. And Apple, you know, would do well to strike back as quickly as possible. They are the leader, you know, over the Android platform by miles and miles in terms of popularity and mind share. But they need to reestablish that now and, you know, cut off the BS at the source.
Yeah. They seem to already be filming ads as well. Several actors have reportedly said on their Twitter they'll never be doing an Apple ad, but they've said that they they've been auditioning for an Apple ad being directed by Sam Mendes, and supposedly the ad features a scene including video chat. So if there's any doubt that there would be video chat on the iPhone 4G, then I don't think there's any doubt now. Not so much based on the
doubt.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Keep in mind, you have a bunch of people that are saying, "Hey, we're doing these things on these commercials," but we don't have hard proof that this is happening.
That's true.
So until Steve Jobs stands on stage and holds up an iPhone and says, "And it has a front-facing camera with video chatting," I don't believe that it's really coming, because I'm still not getting why video chatting on an iPhone would be a good user experience. The iPad is too small for doing that. The iPhone is substantially smaller. Why would that suddenly become a good usable feature when you go from a device that isn't big enough to do it to a device that's even smaller? I just don't see it happening. And sorry about bouncing my head off the microphone there.
Did you injure yourself? Should we call somebody?
No, sometimes I forget the microphone is like right up against my face practically, and I turn and kind of bounce off of it. And it's more of a startling thing, sort of like when you have to smack a dog on his nose with a newspaper.
Well, you know, I think the interesting thing about the fact that these actors are saying they were called in for an audition is that Apple in the past has almost always used employees that they have for these commercials, such as Hannah from the Apple TV ad, and I think she did an iPod Touch ad as well. And she, you know,
famous actors? I didn't catch who they were.
I don't know her last name, but she says, "Hi, I'm Hannah. I work at one of our Apple stores."
No, but I mean the people who are tweeting about this.
I haven't heard of these people either. I think they're just actors who, you know.
My mind's going back to Justin Long and John Hodgman, you know, who were fairly well-known actors but not hugely famous and are probably still both best known for those roles. I wonder if they're going to use actors that are kind of that quasi, you know.
Well, I think that if they do plan to use actors like that with that kind of credibility, those people would be under contract to not Twitter about it. So, you know, I'm not
too
sure.
Do you get the idea that nobody's scared of Apple anymore? I mean, even with the Gizmodo house raid, is it my imagination, or ever since Steve left and came back, it's a different vibe coming from the company? I mean, it's almost like Steve is focused on whatever he's focused on now. He's not running the whole ship. Whoever is dealing with these secrecy security issues has a whole take, and
you're saying when he came back from the from his break a couple of years ago, you mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, he took the break. He had the surgery, came back with a new liver, and you know, what's his name? Cook was running the company top to bottom for several months. And I just wonder, and this is just speculation on my part, but I really wonder how close or far away from day-to-day operations Steve is at this point. Because it's almost like the personality of the company has changed in the way that it deals with even Steve himself answering all these emails over customer emails. And it's not that he hasn't done that before, but now it's like, it's almost like he's just sitting around all day at his desk answering people's emails. You know, it feels like a different company personality wise, and it seems like Steve has a different personality. And then again, I mean, he did, you know, bust Gizmodo in half at the end of it, but it's just a very different vibe from Apple in 2010.
It's very likely that he inherited the personality of the person who he got his liver from. Like in that movie? Like in the movie? What was that movie called with the heart and the that awful, awful movie?
We got the baboon heart?
No, someone got the heart of another person and inherited
their memories.
And that
turned into a killer
memories.
Because that's what the person was.
Yeah.
Oh, God, Steve Jobs, don't murder people. Would that just be a horrible chapter?
No, it turns out he got the heart of someone that was addicted to email and couldn't stop checking their email client.
Maybe it was a Microsoft employee that they sacrificed. They trained them and then they sacrificed them.
You know, I don't buy that for a minute because he's giving accurate information.
Oh, okay. He got the heart of the Google CEO, which explains why Google no longer has a soul. Shazam.
Mm-hmm. Boom. All right.
Yeah.
Moving on. The iPhone screen. Next iPhone screen has been quote-unquote confirmed to have 960 by 640. According to... what was the publication? SuperApples.cz. According to them, they received a next-generation iPhone screen and threw it under a microscope and actually counted the pixels and found that it was exactly double.
If somebody were smart, they'd buy up all these components floating around, glue them together, and sell it as an iPhone 4G. If the fake one got $5,000, how much would you get for one that had actual components in it?
It depends on if you find it in a bar.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here.
I'm thinking there's going to be a lot of people that hate us after this episode.
That's fine.
Yeah. Turn off the hotline. In other news, Apple has announced that the real iPhone 4G will also cost $5,000.
iPhone insurance coming from AT&T.
Oh, God.
$13.99 per month plus deductible.
Plus deductible of like $200.
Plus the retail price of the phone, basically.
Here's the insane part. You could go on eBay right now and buy an iPhone 3GS for about $250 used, moderately scratched on the back. Why on earth would you pay $13 a month, which is, what, $150 a year? I mean, and then a $200 deductible. It's like a sucker's deal.
All right, so I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, okay, $13.99 a month plus deductible for your iPhone insurance. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely insane that anyone would charge that much. I can't believe that this is legit. Therefore,
it is
absolutely true because it's too stupid for real people to want. Therefore, AT&T is doing it.
Yeah. Best Buy has good plans, though, I think, right?
I don't know. But well, AT&T, this is the company that sells people a product that makes their crappy 3G network work better. So, you know, if they can find suckers to buy a product that, you know, to buy a miniature AT&T tower instead of, you know, being paid to host it.
Right. Yeah. You know.
Now, Bill, that's capitalism in action, okay?
Well, you know, I could go on a whole thing about the insurance plans I've had on cell phones prior to the iPhone to where, you know, they will automatically claim there's physical abuse anyway. I mean, the screen on my Razor cracked while it was in my pocket, and they refused to replace it because they said it was my responsibility to carry the Razor in a case. You know, I mean, Oh, my God.
Well, at least
That was AT&T. That wasn't Motorola insurance. So, I mean, this is the kind of criminal enterprise we're dealing with. They were singular back then. They'll change their name again next year. So.
Well, according to this piece, the Mobile Protect plan would cover accidental damage, including liquid, and theft or loss. So at least it isn't completely evil.
Everyone should just do this, and I know it'd be a felony in most states, I think, but claim it is lost, right? Fill out a police report, claim it is stolen, do whatever, and sell it on eBay. Use that money to pay the insurance and then get a new one.
Yeah.
And they can't put the whole country in jail. There's like 100 million iPhone users. So if we all did it together, you guys first.
Yeah.
Of course.
You guys first and then let Bill know how it went. Call the number and let Bill know how it went.
You know, I have a rider on my insurance that covers my electronics. So if my iPhone gets trashed or stolen, whatever, it's covered as part of my homeowner's insurance.
What if you drop it in soup?
Then I better clean it off first.
Get rid of the soup chunks.
Somebody make the soup?
Yeah, and then I call my insurance agent and say my iPhone got toasted, and then I get money for a new one.
Huh. All right. So I think it's time for our iPhone picks, right?
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
Bill, do you have anything?
I haven't really had a chance to download any new apps since our last episode, so I'm just going to pick an album, and it's blatantly self-promotional, but I do have to say that after the day I've had, I'd be scared not to pick this for fear that he'd come and murder me in my sleep or something, but I actually had the once-in-a-lifetime chance to interview Ozzy Osbourne earlier today, and he has a new album coming out. It's available for pre-order now in iTunes, and it's called Scream. And I'm going to pick that, because otherwise the Prince of Darkness will kill me and you'll never hear from me again. So
yeah,
go get the Ozzy album. It's actually, I've heard an advanced copy. It's good stuff. And that's my pick.
Do your part. Get the pre-order of Scream to save Bill's life. Otherwise, Ozzy will kill him.
Ozzy on the cover of Beat Week, June 22nd. You heard it here.
Beatweek.com.
Yes. And we don't want Bill to die.
Well, yes. You do, but
no, we
I
don't
appreciate
because
you
you're
not
cuddly.
Saying publicly.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah.
All right.
It's like the backup quarterback who says, no, I don't want the starter to get injured. I don't want to get to play. Of course not. And the starting quarterback is like, well, at least the guy had the decency to make up that BS publicly. Appreciate that.
Well, you know, that's just called being professional.
Yeah. Well, what does that word mean?
Well, you know.
Hey, at least I had a fake pick, gammit.
Yeah, well, gammit.
I have a pick now.
All right.
Because, you know, I'm grabbing new apps.
I did that whole diatribe so you could go on iTunes and pick an app off the hot list.
And you totally rock.
I know. So,
and I didn't even think to go look at the hot list. Oh,
I don't even know what that is. I just made that up. Is there a hot list?
Probably. Well, there's the top apps. So there's that.
Stopped recording a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just playing a game on my. I'm just playing Plants vs. Zombies.
Oh, I love that game. All right. So have I talked about Filter Storm yet?
No.
Okay. Great. Then I'll talk about that. Okay, so Filter Storm is a really cool application for doing image editing on your iPad, and it has a lot of features for you can do like cropping, you can adjust the hue and the exposure for your images, and apply different effects like put vignettes or sharpen images. You can change the image scale, and you can paint on your images too. So it's a cool application for creating like artistic versions of the images that you've loaded onto your iPad. And I should be able to tell you how much it costs,
it's
but I have
$199.
No idea.
It looks really cool.
It's very cool.
Looks like the UI is good too.
It is. It's definitely a well thought out UI. It's clear that when they started working on this app, that they focused just on what you need to do to use it effectively on an iPad.
Cool. Okay. It's called Filter Storm. It's $199. You can get it in the App Store. All right. So I'm going to go with a double pick because I just saw this earlier today. The my first pick, and this is free, it's just called Tips Lite. It's tips and tricks for the iPad. And it just if you're new to the iPad, if you're just getting an iPad and you're not sure about all these various little secret things that it can do, such as tapping the status bar, for example. For jumping up to the top of the list, you can do that on the iPad, and just as you can on the iPhone, of course. But there are tons of other little tips and tricks in there. And let me just double check. It's called Tips. It's in the App Store. Just search for Tips on your iPad, and it's free because it's the light version. There's actually a version they are trying to sell. Look for Tips and Tricks. So Tips ampersand Tricks. And that's free. So that's my free pick. My for pay pick is actually an application that I've talked about before, but now it's available for the iPad, and that's iTeleport, formerly known as Jadu VNC. Now, you'll want to get there are several versions of iTeleport. There's the Windows version, there's iTeleport for iPad, and then there's just good old iTeleport, formerly known as Jadu. And you'll want to get the one that is for both iPhone and iPad. That way you have a universal version. And for those who aren't familiar with it, iTeleport allows you to see your computer screen, be it Windows or Mac, just using VNC. So it's a VNC client. And it's just it's wonderful. I think it's the it has the best control interface of any of the VNC applications. It has its own method for navigating around the screen. It's not the same as like how you navigate through Safari. It's very intuitive and it works incredibly well. I actually paid the $25 for it when it came out, and you know I can get stuff for free, and I think it's so good that I paid for real money for it. You can actually use it as just a simple controller for your computer. So if you don't really care about seeing the screen, you just want to have a big touch control. So you have all of your function keys, escape, select, quit, close, switch, you know, Apple tab. There's a media button. There's a volume up, down, mute, play, pause, fast forward, rewind, direction keys, page up, down. All this wonderful stuff. It's my favorite. This is one of the apps that I just can't use. I can't have my iPhone or my iPad without this application on it. I use it constantly. And my favorite feature of iTeleport is the app that you run on your Mac, and I think it might work for the PC. I'm not sure, but the way it works is you run it on any computer you want to connect to. You go to the local network. It has Bonjour Discovery, so you just once you've enabled VNC through Mac OS X, just open the application. Shows up right there, and if it's in blue, because you're running the special app, once you've connected to it once, it the application on your iPad or iPhone syncs up with the servers, and that allows you to connect to your computer from wherever. So I'm at my office right now. I can actually bring up my Mac Mini at home because it's running that special app that does a. It talks to the Jadu server and allows me to do a handshake through the internet, and then I can check out my screen from wherever. And it works on both the iPhone and the iPad. It's a universal app. It's called iTeleport. It's $25. Totally worth it if you're into this stuff. If you're into VNC. This is the app to get. And if you do Windows, whatever that's called, Windows something, you know, virtual desktop, what is it called? Remote desktop for Windows. There's also a version of Jadu remote desktop for Windows. But the app I'm picking is iTeleport. $25.
Handshaking teleport. For a moment, I thought it was 1997. I was getting wistful.
There are. It actually has a really cool, teleporting animation that it does as it's connecting. So you feel like you're in the future too.
But does it have the dial-up modem noise? Because that would just seal the cake.
Oh, yeah,
with all the dinner and dinner.
Oh man, that brings back memories.
Or Star Trek noises, something. All right, I think unless you guys have anything else to talk about, I think we're about ready to get out of here. You should check out our sponsor, our wonderful sponsor, Citrix, with GoToAssist Express. GoToAssist.com/Allie. You get a free 30-day trial, and you do have to enter your credit card number, but you can yank it out of there as soon as you start your trial so they don't automatically charge you at the end of your trial period. GoToAssist.com/Allie. You can check out the show notes, as well as our iPhone picks at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast or the new URL, which is wehavecommunicators.com. You can send your feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. And you can check out Bill Palmer's wonderful publication, Beat Week Magazine, at beatweek.com. And you can check his Twitter at twitter.com/Bill Palmer. Thanks for being here, Bill.
Football, orange, shoe, fish, bye.
Wonderful. And you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, as well as twitter.com/jgamet. Thank you so much for being here, Jeff.
It's always great to be here, Fred. Michael. Was it
who's
Tom?
Fred?
He's the guy that does the show on the weeks you're not here.
Oh, okay.
Was it Tom that called me out on the? On
it was
the,
Tom.
Who cares? Okay, Tom. Thanks for calling me out because you're totally right. I needed to be called out on that one. So you rock.
It's about time Jeff came out.
Yep. And if you guys want to call in and ask about anything that we talk about on the show, or leave us a comment, correct us, something like that, ask a question, 202-642-6667, or you can send an audio comment from your iPhone or iPod Touch using the Voice Memos application. Just send an email, feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. You can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MichaelJohnston, if you want. I don't talk about the iPhone a whole lot, but you can do that if you want to. And with that, another We Have Communicators is done. Thank goodness.
An iPod. A phone.
Yeah.
And I kind of ran out of screen.
That's Roadcaster.
Cool. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I thought I had something to say, and then I don't.
Welcome to my world.
Bill, you entertained me. Thank you.
You know, if Adam doesn't show up, we're just going to keep reading this list and talking about movies. And this is going to be the podcast.
We have movie critic communicators.
Yeah, it's called We Have Communicators Special Edition, where we read IMDb on our iPads.
Because we can.
Did anybody else see Freddy Got Fingered?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
Maybe I did.
It's Tom Green.
Okay.
Rip Torn. Actually, Shaq. Shaq was in that movie. See, maybe that's the problem. Maybe Shaq is the the common theme.
If you were a critic and you went to see a movie that had Shaq in it, could you possibly? I mean, Casablanca would have got one star if it had Shaq in it.
Oh man, I love Shaq. I love Shaq. I think anything he touches is gold.
Yeah.
As illustrated in Kazam.
So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Our fingers. Yuck.